Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
I ask each of you, every girl dad, every human here with a voice, a platform, and a heart, to not let his sun set. Shine for us, for our sport, where he once did. Invest in us with the same passion and drive and respect and love as he did his own daughter. In the end, she was a sun just starting to rise, and God, did she glow. May their light forever shine. Kobe and Gigi, I'll love you forever. Thank you.
As we welcome you to the show today, that was an incredibly compassionate and eloquent and just every other positive adjective you could use that, I don't know, that haven't already been applied to Sabrina Ionescu in L.A. for the Bryant Memorial, Kobe and his daughter Gianna, and now in the Bay Area, preparing to play the biggest game of the year, where she and her Ducks could win the Pac-12 regular season championship, starting at 6 o'clock at Maples Pavilion. I was not planning on just sitting there and watching the entirety of the service. And then you see the reaction on social media, and it's like, all right, I better check some of this out. And then I think it was Matt Templeman of KEZI tweeted out that they were going to show it. So I just went to KEZI.com and watched her speak. And like I said, stopped me in my tracks. Here, Michael Jordan, Shaq with an unbelievable story, and then the widow Bryant. How she's able to stand up there and talk about this, certainly with a heavy heart and emotion, but her composure and will or strength, and obviously standing there with three surviving kids or whatever the logic was, I just... Wow, it was amazing. It was incredible. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Quite a weekend as well. We decided, we need to see this fight. So with Nick and my son and a couple of buddies, we pay-per-viewed the hell out of it. And I'll tell you what, if you believe in timing, and if you were among, I'm sure, the many around here who were watching the fight, but also keeping an eye on the Oregon game at Arizona, it kept timing out well enough to like watch in 5 minute spurts, regulation, and then in overtime. And there was not one point in that game where I like, they're probably going to win this. It always seemed like, damn, that just ain't going to happen. And the next thing you know, Will Richardson has the presence of mind to know there's an extra second on the clock, makes the pass, they get a layup, and it's like, oh, they won the game. Wait a minute, how much time's left? Well, what are they going to do? And I mentioned, if you ever Google the end of the 1972 Olympic gold medal game between the USSR and the USA, that's what they needed, a long pass, somebody to fall down, and a big guy to lay it in. Instead, they get a long pass that is somehow caught, a foul called, and the first thing the play-by-play man for ESPN said was Christian Coloco had attempted 15 foul shots all year and made six. And let me tell you something. They weren't even close. They... Those weren't like back rim, front rim. Oh, almost gets the crya. Almost gets the rolls. Like bang, not even close. Clang, less close. And then,
because you'll see a good shooter when they miss the first one. Maybe they something was going on. It was a little hard, and they go, okay, it'll be a softer one this time, and it'll still hit the front of the rim, but then it'll roll in. This was, oh, I hit the back of the rim. Let me try shooting it harder this time, and I'll aim for the same place, and I'll get the shooter's bounce that I always get.
And they win at Arizona on that. So one of my buddies texted me this morning and said, that's got to be like a record for overtime games played in a regular season. Actually, I don't know about nationally, but I got the word from the U of O Twitter account that said the record was 4. That's 6 in conference. I mean, they only play 18 regular season games, 1 out of 3. But, yeah. 24 losses in league among the top 5 teams. That's a lot. That's parity. That's a lack of separation. There are 4 5 loss teams, 2nd through 5th, from the Coloridians. But by the way, UCLA, really? What were you guys waiting on? And how about UCLA, USC, Arizona, and Arizona State all play this weekend with everything on the line. Although USC, with that loss to Utah, didn't look very good. That wasn't a killer. It also wasn't a helper. How about that?
The record, and I believe I asked you about this in a Crunch Exchange or maybe a Lightning Round, Michigan State, Toledo, and Texas, all from 2014, 15, 16, 17, 17, and 18, they all played 8 overtime games. Amazing. In a single season. And with Oregon's pace that they were on, they were due to play in, I believe, 7. So between, if you had incorporated the games they had remaining, they have at least one game in the Pac-12 tournament and more than likely one game in the NCAA tournament. So I believe they are due for one more overtime game at one point or another. The problem is they might not play Arizona again, and they're 2 for 2 playing Arizona in overtime.
But it is the conference record for most overtime games in a regular season. It's kooky. So there's been a lot of, and we get it, in certain sports, certain teams, in basketball a few years ago. Is Indiana back? Is in football, is Texas back? Is boxing back? Relax. It was one really good fight. We're going to get a rematch. And who's the second corner man for Deontay Wilder? Deese, his name is, spelled D-E-A-S. That was arguing they shouldn't, that Mark Breland shouldn't have thrown in the towel. And I know, and you know, it's a term I'm not really comfortable using when referring to athletes about warriors, because, you know, maybe in boxing, because they actually in some ways are putting their lives on the line. But, of course, the average boxer is of the makeup, you know, if I'm up, I can still win this fight. He couldn't. I'll tell you the truth. If you just watch the sequence in the second round, which in essence ended the fight, I'll tell you what, over in the past 24 hours, I've done enough Googling on equilibrium and what a hit to the ear is and what it means to your balance and the positioning of your feet, because he wasn't, you know, sometimes you'll see a guy take one square on the chin, bang, down, and you're like, wow, he gets up. But once he's up, if he avoids getting hit hard again over the rest of the round, let's say he gets taken out a minute in, he's like, that's 2 minutes. I mean, you could actually do the blah, 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 clear your head and you're okay. But after reading what the kind of shot he took to his ear, I mean, by the way, here's an observation. Without balance, it's really hard to box, especially against a 271-pound menace.
It's a hot take, Steve.
So Breland did the 100% right thing, and we were talking as it was happening. I mean, it was at a certain point where it was Bayless, the name of the referee, the ring official, and he almost wasn't even watching anything except Wilder's eyes. And it's like he takes one more unchallenged punch and this thing is over. Then in the seventh, it happened and it was over. So for boxing fans out there, did you take the time to see the fight? The undercard was less than scintillating, but we had a second TV. We had alcohol, we had darts, and we had cornhole. So we were good.
That really tall guy was really interesting to watch because I always think of when you think of boxing and weight classes, you think, okay, if people are about the same weight, it probably means they're about the same size. You always see like, oh, the reaches are both the same. Like it just comes down to age and experience.
Inches.
Right. And this one guy comes in and he's like 6'7". He looks like he's 15. He should be nowhere, should not be allowed to go boxing without like a full headgear thing on, and like his parents have to sign a waiver consent, and he's standing like he could have arched over at his belly button and the other guy would have been swinging over his head the whole time. It was incredible seeing that dude fight, and he was built like a twig.
It looked awkward is probably the best way to put it. It's like seeing him out there, it was like, I've been watching a long, long time this game, and I haven't seen a lot of him. It's probably the most logical way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, even when before Wilder Fury, they had what it was Tyson, Holyfield, and Lennox Lewis were out there, and they were all they're heavyweights, right?
Yeah.
And the only difference was like one was just a little bit shorter than the other. But when even you get to Mike Tyson, who was the smallest of the three, the dude is just a gigantic rectangle. Who was he's 98% muscle, if that. He's probably 103% muscle, just ready to absolutely beat the crap out of you.
Yeah, and I would rather he didn't.
Probably,
By the way, seeing Tyson with the gray beard, it was like all of a sudden you realize, geez, this is 34 years since at 19 he actually became the heavyweight champ of the world. And then seeing Holyfield out there, the truth is, while Holyfield jumped up in the late 80s to fight guys like Alex Stewart, then Buster Douglas, then George Foreman and Larry Holmes, as a heavyweight, he wasn't really a heavyweight. And a lot of guys, when they're younger, as Olympians or gold glovers, fight at a different weight. I think he was more of a cruiserweight when he started his career against guys like Dwight Kawai and Henry Tillman and I think Quick Tillis. And then he saw an opportunity after Douglas knocked out Iron Mike in February of 90, then he jumped up, having won a couple of fights, I think maybe Alex Stewart, and he was next in line, and he knocked him out. And I think that, yeah, then he fought Riddick Bowen, lost, but he beat Holmes well past his prime. Then he got a majority decision in the rematch. He fought Moore and lost that one, which set up George Foreman getting a chance to win the title like 8,000 years after he had originally won it. I mean, think about that. The Down Goes Frazier was 1973, and Moore got knocked out by Foreman 21 years later. He won separate fights. And then Holyfield, of course, had the, let's call it interesting matches and a rematch with Mike Tyson. And by the way, how the hell does Tyson not mock bite him when he hugged him in the ring? That was the only disappointing thing I found about the entire evening.
There would have been a little bit of PTSD from Holyfield there, right?
Like
there would have been a flinch. He probably would have thrown a punch. There would have probably been a small fight, or at least a kerfuffle, maybe a dust up or something in the ring of some. Even if they had talked about it before, and he's like, Evander, we've been over this. It's been a really long time. I've apologized. I'm apologizing again. But I think it would be really funny is when they give me my medal and we all say hello, is when I give you a hug, I pretend to bite your ear. Please be okay. Remember, it's all a joke, Evander. This is all for fun and games. We're going to have a good time out there, and they would fight again. That would be the only thing I could do if somebody tried to bite my ear a second time.
Would have gone after it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, then Holyfield, he went nuts for a while. It was just like, dude, you're too old. Stop fighting. I mean, he fought Lights Out Tony and Haseem Rahman. He had like two draws. He lost three in a row. Then he started losing to guys fighting on internationally that you never even heard of. I mean, his recognized pro career started in the mid-80s, and Holyfield fought last decade. I mean, he fought a couple of bouts in 2010, 2011, and, you know, at that point, you're just looking for cash. And, you know, he wound up with how many? Two draws and 10 losses. So, yeah, the real deal hung around too long. I mean, well, he's only 2 years younger than me, and he fought at 49. That's not healthy. That's not good. But the fight itself, first of all, how about Fury before the fight saying he wants to taste blood, draws it, and he's like, that was very vampire-y.
Nope, very weird.
I was not in favor of that.
Nope.
Not that I would say that to him because he's a low-rent building for the guy is 6'9", 271
nice.
Or something. He's a maniac. He's so big.
The thing is, though, is that they kept showing him and his pre-fight, like the locker room or wherever his room he was in, and he looked like the most relaxed dude on the planet.
A little too relaxed.
And then he comes out to the super slow song, and like that's always eerie when the guy who's about to get into a big fight is using the calm classical music to get into the right mindset, because that's serial killer stuff, man. Like Hannibal Lecter, when he's sitting down with a nice shanty to eat the fava beans and the liver and everything. You know, and he's listening to classical music. That's extremely creepy. Same thing with, did it happen in Dexter or something? But just like, you listen to the calming music, and then that's how you get into the mode that you're like, I'm ready to fight somebody, and I'm ready to eat their drink or taste their blood. That's very strange. So I think if you did see him and you're like, was it a little too far, the trying to actually taste his blood? He'd probably laugh at it, because I think even he would realize, I might have gone too far.
Yeah, and then he was getting wheeled out. I mean, it was supposed to be like the ancient Egyptian days, and they had these gorgeous women that were supposed to be carrying him out, and it's like, nah.
Yeah, it was a weird cross between, like, ancient Egyptian rollout style. Here he is on his stand getting, you know, carried out with the beautiful woman. And also, he was in a very formal English crown with like a big, is it a cape? I don't know. Yeah, the big cape
odd.
On
the
as
whole
well.
Thing was
his
odd.
Styles were clashing the whole time. It was all very strange. No one seemed prepared that there was going to be something on wheels getting pushed out through this very tiny walkway. And maybe not walking that long distance paid off for him, because apparently, Deontay Wilder was very tired wearing his 19,000 pounds of jewels on his head as he made the same walk out.
Yeah, he was like a combination of the character from the tree, Groot, and Black Panther.
Yes.
And I was like, I'm not sure how I could, what I can make of this, but yeah. Tyson Fury comes out all kind of like, it's cool, it's mellow. And then he won the fight handily, easily. And so there was an auto rematch clause where the loser gets the 40-60 split on the next fight. But yeah, hey, I bet on Wilder. I took one look at Fury. And the strange part about it is I've got to admit, until this fight started to get hyped, and whether you were listening on another station or some of the boxing guys on CBS Sports Radio started having guests, and this is probably less than 2 weeks before the fight, so this was probably not last week, the week before, as they started to count down, I was like, man, I'm hearing a lot of people talk about these two fighters. I didn't know much about it. And I'll be completely honest, until last week, I probably could not have picked either guy out of a lineup. And I'm not saying that for effect, but then started studying and where their background's from and who they fought and who were some of the common opponents. And I just thought with the authority with which Wilder consistently delivered punches, and I thought a little more cut, maybe a little better shape. I'm not going to go out there and say Fury was doughy. I mean, you know, he might not have been cut out of granite, but
I wouldn't say he was firm necessarily either.
Well, a little around the love handles, but up top, it was obvious he was in good shape.
The one thing that kept coming back into my mind as Fury kept dominating that fight was, I think it was a UFC fighter, and I can't think of his name right now either, but I think he's also... I guess not the most like in shape looking guy when he fights. Like he's kind of like a super muscular dad bod thing going on, similar to what Fury's got. But he was doing an interview talking about like, how are you able to beat that guy? Like he looks like he's in so much better shape than you. And he's like, oh, he's just got show muscles. He's like, when you get to the point where you're working on all your abs and your pec, your chest, everything else that you kind of don't need in a fight, he's like, all of those muscles take up more oxygen than everything else I'm working on. So I work on my cardio, work on my legs, work on my arms a little bit, and then I just, you know, work on my punches, and like anything else that happens after that is just kind of like, hey, that's a positive little after effect. But I'm not trying to bench press and work on my chest a whole bunch and have the six pack, because it slows you down because those muscles need more oxygen and then you get more tired.
Well, I'll tell you, whatever he's done works, because he didn't seem winded. He didn't seem to lack speed that when he needed it. I mean, because of his size and his reach, from that second round on, because of the effectiveness of his jab from a strategic point of view, you never got a sense that Wilder was going to be able to load up and uncork that devastating punch, which he was known for. It didn't look like it was going to happen.
No.
And then all of a sudden, into the third and fourth round, it's like, oh, blood's coming out of his ear. That means the damage was substantial, which means his balance and his equilibrium are off. And so whatever minimal chance he had is flushed, and it was just a matter of time. And you're like, all right, you're going to lose the fight. Don't let anything tragic happen. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, you can hit us up to the text line, 321-0824. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll have an update and more Crunch Time next. 95.3, The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Ducks down by one. Pritchard, top of the key. Steps back, long two, off the rim. Ball tipped out. Richardson corrals it. Richardson, 5 seconds to go. Richardson in the paint to Houston. He lays it in with 1 second to go. Ducks take the lead, 73-72.
Post it, because that would be the final. And, I mean, you want to talk about an even game. Oregon up three at the half. Arizona outscores them by three in the second half. Oregon outscores them by one in overtime and scores the game winner with a second to go down one. Then there's two missed free throws. Points in the paint, 32-30. Second chance points, 9-9. Fast break points, 12-10. Lead changed 18 times. Score tied 9 times. It was, you want an even game? Okay, there you go. Pritchard did not come off the floor. Richardson played all but 5 minutes. And, you know, in the pregame, I heard Dana Altman talking with Joey. Joey still does play-by-play, right? I was going to say Jerry, which, by the way, after, you know, considering the voice of Duck football and baseball and basketball for a bunch of years, I'm going to forgive myself. But Coach Altman figured two games, maybe three, really cost Oregon because of their foul shooting. You think Sean Miller isn't kicking themselves in the ass? Dude, they went 10 of 21 from the foul line. From the foul line! They were 10 of 23 from three-point land! No, seriously, think about what I just said. That is ridiculous. And, of course, you don't, you know, in the heat of the moment, we're all selfish, miserable jerks. And sorry, there was nobody in my son's den who wasn't like, miss them both. I don't know who you are. We've never met. And then, of course, after that, kid's got to be just brokenhearted. I mean, there were 11 free throws missed by one team, three by the other. CJ Walker missed two. And like we said, with Coloco, his weren't really close either. But Player of the Week again, Peyton Pritchard, 38 points. And by the way, 8 of 8 from the line. Steely! Oh, another one. I was talking how even the game was. Rebounding, Oregon. 10 offensive, 27 defensive, 37. Huge difference for Arizona. 11, 26, and 37. They were even equal on the boards. They both made 26 buckets. Each team made 10 three-pointers. Oregon made 11 free throws, Arizona 10, but the difference was they missed 11, the Dukes only missed 3. I mean, wow, what a crazy game. And I'll tell you, you probably get a different view when you're just sitting there and wired in. So we've got Ducks and Cats, which we were able to catch the end of San Diego State, and we're able to catch the end of Gonzaga BYU on a, you know, what I would call a, because we're spoiled, a pedestrian 32-inch screen. My son, in because he's redone and insulated his garage. I mean, it's so big in there. You got enough for a separate area for darts, a pool table. And his screen is, in essence, could fit 4 60-inch screens. So I think diagonally they said it was 128 inches.
Yeah, it was just easier at that point to say it's this many feet across. I think he said it was 11.
Right.
It's 11 feet. Yeah.
And so that's what we're watching the fight on, because that's what we spend the dough on.
Sure.
And it was almost kind of funny. It's like, compared to that, watching a 32-inch screen was like watching it on your phone at a diner.
Oh, hurt my eyes. I can't adjust to it. It was hard adjusting back to my TV at home, and I think it's like a 50-inch or something like that, and tiny little apartment pretty close to the TV. Right. I'm like, it's not 11 feet across. I can't live like this
anymore.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. I need to change things up here.
Yeah, fill in the blank for viewership. Once you do 114 inches across, yeah, you can't go back.
Yeah, it's just kind of like movie theater or nothing at this point. Like, you know, just might as well just buy out a room there.
I'll tell you what we have done over the years. A play that goes, and either in football or basketball, the officials are reviewing it, just like that. I mean, you have it. Bah! Right. It's like, oh, he's out of bounds. Oh, the ball was out. Oh, no, that's red ball. It clearly hit the end of his pinky and knocked the ball out of bounds against Arizona State.
It's the Pac-12 officials are watching on like a TV from the 50s that's in standard def that they can't really see. They're actually, it's old enough where you can still bang the side of it to somehow get a better signal. And yeah, you're watching it on an 11-foot wide TV screen. It's clear as day. What are they getting wrong? I don't understand. Yeah,
what is taking them so long? Good God, y'all. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you wanted to jump on in. I want to get to a tweet I saw over the weekend, which I thought was interesting, yet I couldn't properly answer for two different sports. But did you guys see the Houston Astros convicted and penalized for stealing signs during the 2017 run to the World Series, literally stole another sign at a game? So the story was, and then you saw the video and the photos. Obviously, it's a spring training game. It was at the Houston complex, wherever they're training. I don't know where the Astros train, whether it's Grapefruit League in FLA or Cactus League in Arizona. But somebody brought a sign. I think it said asterisks, in essence, and they took it. That's a bad look. And I'll tell you what, since the story broke, they really haven't done anything right. And it begins at the top, with Jim Crane, who's a Nimrod, and filters down to the arrogant and dismissive nature. Although today, Altuve was playing in Tampa, got introduced, and it was a chorus of boos. And this is spring training. I mean, the best part is when they're in other yards, it's not like they'll be like, well, could you go easy on the signing? Yeah, we're going to risk the relationship we have with our fans who are paying to get in for you jerk stores. It's like, no way. And the best part is they're going to play 81 road games. And here's hoping that the fans at each stadium, every game, every day, three-game series, three different opportunities. You're playing Thursday through Sunday, that's four different opportunities to just make it their mission to torment them and make them as miserable as possible. I want to hear some clever chants, some signs. The promotion, I mean, if somebody doesn't capitalize and hand out little garbage cans with, like, you know, kitchen spoons that you could bang, I mean, that's a blown opportunity. I mean, if we were a major city and this were, let's say PK Park was a yard of Major League Baseball, I'd be like, hey, Santa Pack, you got to hand out a bunch of little garbage cans with spoons to bang on them.
The Astros' only saving grace is that Major League Baseball, like league-wide across all 29 other ballparks, well, and even their ballpark for when opposing teams' fans come to town, is that there are limitations on what you can bring in and how you can bring it in. And for the most part, signs are allowed. And that's if you're going to get so mad that you're not going to allow anybody to bring any sort of paper into a building for fear of what they might write on it, you are in for a long summer.
Yeah, there's no way the other 29 teams are going to risk alienating their fan base, their support system, for these cheating scumbags. Just no way. And by the way, like you said, you might not be allowed to bring a plastic container like that in, but if once you get in, they hand you one as part of a promotion, like a bobblehead, let her rip. All right, 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Larry. Larry, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. It is a great afternoon.
Okay.
In regard to the Ducks overtime game with Arizona, it would have been really fitting if that 85-5-foot shot by Peyton Pritchard had gone a little further than just hitting the net. That was pretty close.
Oh, yeah. At the end of regulation?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
At the end of regulation.
We couldn't believe. I mean, when he let it go, it was like, well, it's dead on, and if it was another 3 inches, it's a swish.
Yes, and then who would have, and then if somebody would have told you, okay, we're going to be in overtime, but Peyton isn't going to score a point.
Right.
Who would have thought we would have won? And every point was going to be scored by one individual, Shakur Justin.
Yeah.
He scored all 9 points, I believe.
Yeah. You know, the 38 were in regulation, but, you know, in overtime, I guess it's kind of an all hands on deck, whatever is available. And, man, just the it's just nerve wracking.
Well, what did you think of the long Grant Hill to Christian Laettner toss by Arizona? Fortunately, it wasn't like that. But that was a very well-placed long pass to their, fortunately, poor free throw shooter.
Yeah. No, when,
I wonder why Sean Miller picked him.
Yeah, with his name was Christian Coloco, and first of all, it's a great pass, and you've really got no other choice, because once it's caught, and if a guy even has to turn around in a second, it's difficult to get the shot off. But I've watched the replay a few times, and I'm not 100% sure about the foul call, but I know he got his right arm on him, but it just looked like a little overthrown and a difficult catch, and obviously he wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, that was a poor call by the ref, I think. But then again, what's Peyton doing grabbing him?
Yeah, there's also that.
But you go down history lane, and Adam Spanich caught the ball and took a dribble and shot an 0.8 of a second from half court.
Right. Well, that was
how
on
that, happen?
That was on the Mac court timekeeper, whoever that guy was. Soon as that ball hit his hands, he's got to be hitting that. But, you know, 21 years later, we might have to move on.
Well, it was a great win to beat Arizona, and let's beat Stanford tonight.
All right. Have a good one, Larry. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you'd like to jump on in. By the way, you could also hit us up via the text line, 3210824. You can try us on Twitter at 953thescore for the station, for yours truly at Sports Talk 953. And you can hit up Nick at Rick Nodgers. One quick thought before we take a break and get ready for the Richter scale. 95.3 The Score presents the world's largest indoor garage sale. It's March 28th. That's a Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it's held at the Lane County Fairgrounds. So if you're thinking, what a great way to capitalize and get some spring cleaning done, or just some stuff's just got to go, grab a spot now. Booth space starts $65 for a 10-foot by 10-foot spot. Contact the front desk here at KUJZ. Reserve your space day of to get in. It's only $2. It's the world's largest indoor garage sale, March 28th at the Lane County Fairgrounds. Brought to you by our friends from KUJZ, 95.3 The Score. All right, let us take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up Crunch Time on a Monday with the Richter scale next, 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Caleb will get the ball in bounds. He's checked by CJ. Off to Rose into the lane. Shot blocked by Whiteside, knocking Rose to his backside. Brown with eight. And again, that Detroit bench has come ready to play tonight. 6-point Detroit lead. Off to Carmelo. 4-3. Got it. Carmelo Anthony with a triple.
Talk about a 1-2 punch last night to come back and bump the Pistons at Moda, which started out as a incredible first period as the Blazers outscored Detroit 40-24, but then got outscored 61-34. 40 in the middle two periods, and we're trailing going into the fourth. But a little too much C.J. McCollum, who had 6 of 11 from downtown, also had 12 assists, 9 rebounds, 41 points. Melo hit 5 of 9. Between those two guys, how about 11 of 20? And Melo with 32 points as they beat Detroit to get back, I guess, within 6 games of 500. The final was 107-104. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If going to lock it up a little bit, because Monday, the end of crunch time, simply means this.
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Sounds kind of good, doesn't it?
Other people want it. It must be good.
So it's bad. How bad?
Oh my God, that's the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Welcome to the Richter Scale, wrapping up, talking about the weekend that was, some of the big sporting events, news items and such. I bring them up and Steve tells me how big of an impact they had or will have, and we'll start with the big fight. Not the biggest boxing fan I am, but went out with you and watched the Wilder Fury fight on Saturday, and wow, is that heavyweight division something else. Tyson Luke Fury looks like the 19-teens version of a heavyweight fighter, really tall, kind of doughy, looks like a brute, and I think if he grew out of mustache, he'd look exactly like one of those caricatures from a fighter from the 1920s. Just, you know, wrong. Yes, here I am. I'm a boxer. Some way, somehow, through his coaching, his mindset, or maybe a great technical ability, he came away with a 6th-round TKO over Deontay Wilder. He said that he would press Wilder. He did. Fury said Deontay couldn't handle his punches. He ruptured his eardrum. Tyson said that he wanted to taste blood. He literally did that, too. All the way from the depths of cocaine addiction, suicidal thoughts, to the mountaintop of undefeated heavyweight champion of the world. What a life journey. How big of an impact did the Wilder Fury fight have on boxing?
Huge. It got it back on the lips of, I guess, former fans who had kind of grown to think, well, that's the end of an era. I used to love it. I used to look forward to it. And now it's like, whoa, okay. Now I'm actually looking forward to the next couple fights among probably 3 boxers. So that's a 9.5.
All right. Also on Saturday, college hoops was a doozy. In the morning, #1 Baylor hosted #3 Kansas. And surprise, surprise, Kansas's Bill Self got the win, 64-61. They're the new #1 in the AP poll. Then our running Rebels at UNLV took down an undefeated San Diego State team, 66-63, ending the Aztecs as the only remaining undefeated team in the country. And then just after that, Gonzaga, then #2 in the country, gets blown out on the road by BYU, 91-78. All of this ends with a new top 25 of Kansas, Baylor, Gonzaga, and Dayton in your top 4? I mean, it's getting to the time where people need to start taking a look at the rest of college basketball to fill out their brackets, and I don't know what I'm going to do. Seriously, Dayton is involved. What the hell is going on? How wide open do you expect this year's NCAA tournament to be?
The most wide open I have ever seen. And I'm not saying that lightly because, like you said, they're talking about a Final Four with a chance that maybe 3 teams outside the Big Six get in. And I am all about it. I think this is awesome. So, yeah, again, we're looking at a tournament from where I sit right now. It looks like it could be a 10.
Oh, wow. Things at the top around the nation were insane. They were also insane just in the Pac-12. Arizona State started the weekend on a 5-game winning streak. They beat Oregon. They held on by the skin of their teeth against OSU. Now they're first in the Pac-12, just a 0.5 game ahead of Oregon, Colorado, and UCLA. I have no idea what's going on in this conference. And in classic Pac-12 fashion, the league is kind of eating itself alive. And right before what is set to be actually a very interesting Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, ASU has a big game against UCLA this week. The Ducks have a chance to get revenge on OSU on Thursday. I don't know what's going on. Could Bill Walton be right that 9 teams have a chance to make the tourney from this conference? How important will the final 2 weeks of the regular season be for the 5 teams atop the Pac-12?
Well, he's insane.
Well, yes.
Because, you know, aside from, I guess, Washington at this point, I guess 11 teams could win the conference tournament and get in. But, you know, you got Utah, Cal, Oregon State, Washington, and Washington State have like none, zero, zippo at-large shot. So there are 7 possible at-larges. But the last 2 weeks are huge. I mean, from Arizona up to Arizona State, you could either be facing a dangerous USC or Stanford in the first round, or get a bye. So, yeah, let's give that one a 9, and it's awesome.
Last one here, and it's time for me to get personal. With the NHL trade deadline, plenty of future considerations being moved around. Teams moving from third-round picks that they got from other teams that team got from another team. It's pretty wild. But and just like I expected, the Sharks have gone and Ray-Borked Patrick Marleau. But in a real test of my patience, they've sent Mr. Shark on his journey towards Lord Stanley via Pittsburgh. Come on, Sharks. You're really going to try and test my love of Patty by sending him to the Pens? Like, actually actively having me think about rooting for Sidney Crosby winning another Stanley Cup? And they couldn't move Jumbo Joe Thornton today either, so there's nothing else that the Sharks fans can root for. How hard do you find? Do you think it's going to be for me to root for Patty to win a Stanley Cup?
I think in the beginning it won't be that big a deal because you could just watch him. But if somehow, you know, they beat Washington, they beat Boston, or beat Tampa to win the East, and then they're playing a Western Conference team that you hate,
right,
I think you'll find it a lot easier. So I think circumstance will dictate policy, and it's going to have to play itself out, because right now, Pittsburgh's a good team, and they added a 40-year-old, but are they of the caliber of either the Bruins, the Lightning, or the Caps right now? I mean,
Washington did a lot as well to make their team better, and but the Penguins do, I think, by definition in the NHL contract, the bylaws of the new CBA, those two teams have to play each other in one round or another, so that probably will happen.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, one way or another, and we will talk about that in the next hour, the Ovechkin goal to get him to 700 was, it was real and it was spectacular.
Tannenism.
Because certain guys have a trademark. It could be a catch and run for a receiver. It could be a baseball player who hits most of their homers into the power alleys. Ovechkin, I don't know, in the modern game, and I'm talking the last 25 years, maybe Brett Hull, who is better off the one-timer. And just, I mean, he did not have a lot of room. And forget who the goalie was for the Devils. But no. He beat his ass. It was just from a tough angle. Nice centering pass, like Kucherov, I think it was, who was actually kind of going down at the time. And the great eight just, boom, goal, 700, next. Ping. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour. A very worthwhile weekend. And we will absolutely light them up with some impressive performances. But that's a wrap for Crunch Time. Sports Talk is next. 95.3, the score.
What the hell's going on out here?